we have to, that's one of the tweets that I say is, please have mercy on your, have mercy on the woman in your life. She sacrifices her happiness for yours to make you into a better person. She's giving up her whole life. And she's taking a stick and she's shoving it into you and says, do this better and do that better. And why aren't you living up to your potential? And how can you just sit around all day? And why aren't you doing this? And she does the same thing with you. And she does the same thing with her children. And it's this energy which drives the world forward. You know, I try to explain this to my non-Jewish clientele, but as from Yidden, we understand that Hashem specifically created women for this purpose.
To divorce?
To be discontent.
Uh-huh.
That's why.
Interesting. That's a snippet of the upcoming conversation of this episode 13 of the Let's Get Serious podcast with me, Nathan Gettysburg. And we're going to talk about what is going on with marriage in this era and how your marriage or future marriage can thrive. I'm talking with David Feldman. David is a licensed marriage therapist and the creator behind the Recreating Intimacy program. We'll hear about how the program works and David's therapy philosophy. We'll also hear about David's interesting background, how he went from a career in technology to marriage therapy, and from a non-religious upbringing to a deeply religious life. I think you'll enjoy this conversation very much. I think David's really articulate and smart and very experienced, and has a lot of wisdom to share on a variety of topics, all mostly relating to marriage, but other things as well. And I would encourage you to look at the description. There's a link to David's website, davidfeldman.com. A link to his Twitter profile and a link to his book. Very fun, easy to read book called 52 Tweets to a Great Marriage. As always, this show is for adults. And if you are listening to this and you are under 18 years of age, please beware. It is extremely boring and will involve a lot of discussion about tax planning and obscure 70s musical acts. So without further ado, here is episode 13 of the Let's Get Serious podcast.
You're listening to the Let's Get Serious podcast, the relationship podcast for a man, single, married, separated, divorced. There's something here for the whole chevra. Here's your host, Nathan Gettysburg.
Thank you so much for being here, David. I really appreciate you being on the podcast.
Of course. Very excited to speak with you.
So I just want to start with a quick summary of how you ended up getting into this topic of marriage and relationships.
Sure. I'd be happy to let you know. So I got married when I was 25. I grew up not religious, and I ended up going to some yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael eventually. That's a whole separate story. And I found my Besheret at age 24, and we got married. And I was working in technology for the first half of my life. And at some point, I just, although as much as I appreciated working with computers and clients and spreadsheets and databases, I felt like I wanted to actually work with people on a more heart-to-heart basis. And I've always been a very communicative person and somebody, a relationship-oriented person. And I had great relationships modeled for me since I was a young man, through my parents and my parents' friends. And I just decided, I wanted to go back to school to get my degree and to become a professional in marriage and family therapy. The story is a little bit deeper than that. Maybe a little bit later we can get into that. But I went back at age 45, around 40, actually age 42, let's just say. And it took a while because, I'm a working man, a large family, religious from man. And so I went to classes at night for years, did my internship and got my degree. And then I went to get my licensure. And I've been practicing family and marriage therapy for quite some time now, working with couples and individuals on their relationships. And I love it. I absolutely love it.
But what do you like about it more than computer software?
First of all, although I may be mistaken, I feel that because today's technology is such an impact on our lives, but I feel very confident in saying that our marriage is our number one dynamic that's occurring in our lives. From people, I could say that the relationship with Hashem would be number one. Halavai that we all felt that way. Most of us really relate to our wives and children more often and more intensely and more emotionally than any other type of relationship that we have. And as my father once said to me, he said, you know, when I asked my father once, my father at some point, he lost his first wife, which was my mother. She passed away. And he eventually remarried, and he married a very wealthy woman. We grew up like lower middle class our whole life here in Chicago. We were a very happy family. But eventually, when he was 65, he was very, very well in shape and very smart man and energetic and a world traveler. And you can imagine a 65-year-old, healthy, intelligent man, the line out the door of wealthy women that were waiting to date him was, you know, indescribable, just around the block type thing. So
right. He got lots of shidduch resumes?
Laced with gold, let's just put it that way. I mean, every widower is looking for a man that they could spend their golden years with.
Right.
And he eventually married a woman who was very wealthy. So I had asked my father, I said to him, you know, at some point, it was clear his lifestyle was changing drastically. And I said to him, you know, does money make you happy? Good question, you know. He would know, right? He grew up his whole life struggling to provide for us, and he did a great job, but it was difficult. And then eventually he, you know, had this golden parachute. So I asked him. So he said to me, David, he says, if everything else in your life is going well, primarily your marriage, your relationship with your children, your sense of self, you know, but primarily things are going well inside your home. Then he said, yeah, money makes a difference. It's nicer to have more money, and it definitely can help you be happier. But he said, if your marriage isn't going well, and if you're not getting along with your wife, and your kids are giving you grief, then all the money in the world isn't going to make a difference. And I found that to be very profound. You know, I found that to be a very deep answer and a very true answer. And I see this with my clients. I have some of my clients are extremely wealthy, and they're miserable. You know, they're just in relationships that they feel so sad in them. I also have poor clients that are in that same situation, but then some of my clients are very, very happy, and they do the work, and they see tremendous change in results, and their income level has nothing to do with it.
Right. So I just wanted to kind of jump ahead and ask a question. In your view, why do marriages end?
Oh, good question. You're really hitting me with the tough ones today, Nathan. Why do marriages end? This is my thought on why marriages end.
And I just to set it on a track, because the podcast is aimed at the firm male community, like, why do firm marriages end is also more generally, but that's set you down that track specifically.
Yeah.
If you have perspective on that.
Yeah, for sure. My main perspective on why marriages end, and this is all part of my philosophy in general on marriages, is because of emotional disconnection. So much less so on, let's just say, disagreements, much less related to boredom in the marriage, much, much, much less related to the way your partner looks physically, much less related to some of the hardships that you're going through, although that can be a tremendous challenge, primarily through emotional disconnection. We tend to ignore and not give enough energy, not put enough energy and effort into our emotional safety, intimacy, and our emotional connection. And when we ignore that, then all of these other aspects of real life tend to have an oversized effect on our day-to-day interactions and our ability to feel for each other and love each other. And when we allow that flip to occur, where we prioritize outside happenings, and we allow the difficulties of just living in this world to take over our lives and our relationships, then we disconnect from our spouses, and then everything is a big deal. Everything is a fight. Everything is a disconnection. Everything is a a reason why we weren't meant for each other from the very beginning. Everything is a reason why you must have married the wrong person. When we stay heart to heart, and when we put energy into that aspect of our relationship, then a lot of these other issues just magically go away.
You know, sometimes marriage becomes so routine and burdensome, you know, if you've been married for a long time and all the other pressures in life start building up, and the marriage just seems like another job, especially if some of the things you mentioned are there. If there's if there's this disconnection, if there's a lack of physical attraction for one reason or another, or somebody's, you know, sick, or, you know, just unable to really contribute in the marriage, how do you convince a couple or one side of the couple that it's worth doing the work to maintain that emotional connection? Because it's a lot of work, and that drive to do so as time goes on and with other challenges, is just, it might seem like not worth the work.
Sure, of course. And you know, I want us to qualify, at least I'm going to qualify what I'm talking about here. Now, I'm not this, I would prefer this podcast, and I'm sure you would agree with me on this. So let's see if you agree with me on this. You know, there are special podcasts and articles, even in the Jewish press, there's a whole weekly post about it, about really severe situations where, let's just say, a spouse, heaven forbid, got severely injured, and now you're dealing with somebody in a wheelchair, or somebody lost cognitive function or something like that. Or, you know, I'm not, for the sake of this conversation, I'm not going to be addressing any of those, what I would call drastic type of situations. Right, let's just focus on your average marriage that falls apart. You know, two people are relatively healthy, and, you know, so you ask me, like, how is it, you know, that you convince people? The thing is like this, and Nathan, I'd love your opinion on this as well. My general approach, my general philosophy is that the status quo of our relationship with our wives is that we are in love with them and infatuated with them. There is a reason why you married this person. Right? You thought she was gorgeous. You thought she was funny. You thought she was pretty. You thought she was witty. You thought she was sexy. You thought she had great values. You thought that she laughed at your jokes and could listen to you when you shared. And when she shared, she said wise things, and there was intuition that you sensed from her, and you both were on the same team. Most people experience this either before they get married, or even during their first, you know, for sure during that first year, first couple of years. This person, right. And that's not just as it says in Hayom Yom and some other sources in Yiddishkeit, you know, it's your soul that's the reason why you feel these romantic feelings. And even your, as long as we're speaking to from people, even your taiva to be intimate with this person, it's an expression of your soul. There have been beautiful women, I didn't grow up from, so there have been beautiful, beautiful women that I've had relationships with that I just never really connected to. Like, it just didn't, and, you know, I'm not saying I was intimate with them. I mean, it was, you know, I had interactions with beautiful women that I just never, but when I met my wife, it was something completely different. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because I don't need to convince people to do something that they don't already want to do. Mm-hmm. It's all there. It just needs to be revealed. And that's really what my focus is on working with couples, to reveal. That's why my program that I have is called Recreating Intimacy. It's not creating intimacy. Intimacy was created already. I'm just helping you and her bring that back out to the surface where it belongs.
That's actually really fascinating, because my experience with marriage therapy is that it's essentially like a mediation session to sort of break down problems. Since the last mediation or the last therapy session, where you each kind of present your disagreements and the therapist kind of helps you work through them. But I like your approach in that if you really just bring out, what do you guys like about each other? Why did you get married?
Oh, it's Nathan. I can't tell you the power of that statement. I mean, my first session with you, the way I do is a little different. I don't meet with the couple together. So what happens is they sign up for my program, and it's a there's it's 6 sessions with him and 6 sessions with her, and then we have 2 joint sessions. So it's 3 sessions each, a joint session, then 3 sessions with each, and another joint session. Very unconventional, works great.
Wow.
And one of the things that I speak with on the first session for almost for all the time for both of them, unless there's some other serious presenting problem, is, and this is the foundation of my program, is the concept of goodwill. And goodwill means that we love each other, we respect each other, and we appreciate each other. That's usually buried by the time they get to me. There is usually no goodwill at all in the relationship, which creates a very contentious environment. And
Sure.
so one of the things that I do with them after, first, of course, the first half an hour, 45 minutes, especially if I'm talking to a woman, is like complain, 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 which is fair. She's got a lot of complaints. And I don't, I'm a therapist, right? So I'm here to listen to her, right? That's my job. But at some point in that first hour, I will eventually find my way into asking her, so tell me, why is it that you fell in love with your husband? Give me 3 reasons. Right? And there's usually silence on the phone. She can't come up with one. Maybe she would say
Huh.
something like, well, he was very firm when I met him. Or, I mean, that's if I'm dealing with Jewish people. I mainly deal with secular people or non-Jewish people, but whatever it is that she, he was a good provider, whatever it is that comes to mind. And I help her. I help her. I say, okay, well, is he funny? Was he loyal? Does he, did he, was he a good listener? Is he an honest person? And through the kind of conversation, I get her onto this roll where she starts rattling off not just 3, but 5, 10, 15, 20 amazing qualities about this man. And when we're done, it's like she just took a shower of all the crap that she'd been holding on to for who knows how many years. And I smile because I have to stop her. She's ready to go for 25, 30. And we run out of time in the session. And I say, these 20 things are now the way that you and I from now on are going to be referring to your husband. And it's just like, it's mind blowing. I take that list. I tell her I'm holding her. I said, I'm using this whole list against you from now on. And every session, when she starts into her complaining about something or another, I remind her. I said, let's just briefly go over what you said about your husband last week or 2 weeks ago. And I send her this list on WhatsApp. And every day she writes him a note of gratitude based on something from that list. So she can't tell me that she doesn't know what to say, because she's already given, I trap her, right?
Right.
And the whole
Right.
relationship changes. Everything changes. If you want, I can tell you a really funny story about a couple that came to me.
Sure.
Would you like me to tell you the funny story?
I love funny stories.
So I had this couple that came to me, and it's usually, the guys usually, guys are disappointed in the relationship, but they're not usually the one that reaches out. It's usually the woman's really pissed. She's the, she, and she's given up, and he's just like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And, she just doesn't like me anymore, And I'm like, okay, so this is typical. And so we get them on the schedule, and they sign up. And he's a big music producer, and she's some sort of doctor, but she's and she tended to be more the responsible one in the relationship, so which was a point of contention. So as usual, she signs up first, and for the first session, I like to have the women first. So she signs up first, and then her husband was scheduled to be at some point later in the week. So she signs up first, and we do this exercise. She complains, 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 and we do this exercise. And it was like a major turnaround for her. And off she goes with her homework of writing gratitude messages to her husband, and turning over a new leaf and looking at him in a different way and focusing on this list and reading this list every day and kind of, changing her perspective. Anyway, the next week, the gentleman, the music producer, he had some client come into town. He canceled. So, okay, no big deal. So she comes in the next week, and she's like, oh, I don't know what you said to him. but things have changed drastically. So I said, okay. I said, I kept my mouth shut. I'm like, wow, I'm so happy for you. What's different? She goes, I don't know, but you know, I've been sending him these messages and he's been so attentive to me and he's been treating me so lovingly. And it's like a new man. And I just don't know. I can't explain it, but our energy is so different. And the negativity is really, you know, disappearing. And I'm just so excited. Good. So we do our next session. You know, I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, I got to get this, you know, I got a lot, this guy's got a lot of catch up to do, but good for him. I don't know. Anyway, so I have a next session with her, and the next day he was supposed to come in. And I said, I do this communication module and this listening module with her, which is part of the program. So she's all got her homework and she's doing gratitudes and she's learning how to speak to him and she's communicating with him better and she's becoming a good listener. Anyway, the guy canceled again for the next week. For the next day. So I'm like, oh my gosh, this lady's like two sessions ahead of him. And she's like, anyway, the next week, the third week comes along. She's like, you are a miracle worker. I've been trying to get him to change for 20 years or 10 years. And I haven't been able to, you meet with him just a couple times. And he's like a new man.
Wow.
we're talking. And she's just like, he listens and he's a better. And I just love being with him and we're having sex again. And we're just, you know, our relationship is better than ever. And I just really love spending time with him. You know, and she's like, well, how did his sessions go? So I said to her, I have to be honest with you. There's like a dead silence on the phone. And she's like, you gotta be kidding me. And I said, no. It was like such a light bulb moment for her and for me, but I knew this was gonna happen anyways, but it was such a light bulb moment for her. Cause it was something I was working with her on. Like her perspective about him was so, you know, she could change everything just by the way she saw him. She didn't believe me. It happens to be that the guy missed all of his sessions, you know, finally, you know, the third week, of course, I caught up with him, but it was just such an eye-opening experience for her. And it's a story I love to tell because when we focus on what's right and how we really feel about our partner, and the problems, she even said to me, she goes, one of the things she said to me after that third session was, I don't even remember why I came to you. She said, because I said to her, can we go over the list of things of the issues that you brought? She goes, they're not relevant. I don't even remember what it was that I said. Right?
Has that kind of thing ever happened the other way around where it's you're seeing the man mostly and he sees changes by just kind of changing things?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I just kind of.
It works both ways.
Yeah. I just kind of had the fun yesterday with a guy who was like, thought that, you know, thinking about positive things is like a totally cheesy thing to do. And writing text messages. Men have a hard time with it. Writing text messages to her about this and that. What a waste of time. And we were coming across our sixth session and the guy gave me this whole lecture about how now that he's doing it, he can't even believe that he didn't see all these incredible things about his partner in the beginning. And how many more things, the more he thought the more he did it, the less he'd run out of things to say. And he says, the more I spend time looking at her for who she is, the more I see that how many things I neglected from the very beginning, how many more things I could write. I could write 100 of these a day. And right. I was shocked because that's like part of my article on this. It's like part of my e-guide on this that I give my clients is like, and when we read it together, they're kind of like, this sounds, this guy's enthusiastically telling me his lived experience, which is that the more he sees the positive. So in my therapy, I rarely deal with quote unquote problems. I mean, there are some structural problems I like to work with if there's some financial issues, you know, but we focus on positivity and then we focus on things like communication, listening, setting boundaries, setting up an intimate life that works over the long run. And really these are the five basics that if you get even halfway right, you're going to have a good marriage.
Right. So you mentioned that it's usually the woman who has all the complaints and the guy is just thinking that, you know, he's wondering what is she so upset about? Like, you know, I'm doing everything I can do.
Totally.
So that's interesting because I mean, it's a well-known fact that women initiate divorce more than double the amount of times as men. So I'm just wondering, you kind of touched on it, but like, what do you think ultimately is the reason for that?
Well, I try to explain this to my non-Jewish clientele, but as from Yidden, we understand that Hashem specifically created women for this purpose.
To divorce?
To be discontent.
Uh-huh.
That's why.
Interesting.
I mean, when Adam and Chava were in Gan Eden, Hashem saw that it wasn't good for man to be alone, right? Why is that? Because if Adam was alone, what do you think? Ultimately, you know, again, I hope none of your listeners are an apikoros or anything like that. But technically, a bag of Doritos, a remote control, and the hockey game. I mean, that's sitting on the couch. That's the way he would have just sat there in the garden forever, you know. And then he brings this. He says, "Okay, SOS." He brings in this woman, and what's her job? Her job is to be, we say it in Hebrew, an Ezer Konegda, and a help meet, to help mate. And what does that mean? Her job is to poke him constantly and tell him everything he's doing wrong. So a woman was created that way. And truthfully, we have to have rachmanis on them. You know, we have to, that's one of the tweets that I say is, please have mercy on have mercy on the woman in your life. She sacrifices her happiness for yours to make you into a better person. She's giving up her whole life. And she's taking a stick and she's shoving it into you and says, do this better and do that better. And be why aren't you living up to your potential? And how can you just sit around all day? And why aren't you doing this? And she does the same thing with you. And she does the same thing with her children. And it's this energy which drives the world forward. So yeah, women are discontent. They're not ever, I hate to say this publicly, but they're never really happy.
This is very interesting and going to be very controversial, but I never heard it directly put that way. But I remember I once talking to my local dry cleaner who was like an old Greek man. And I was asking him why he was still working. He owned this place and it was in a valuable part of town at this point. Like, there was developments and he still had his little dry cleaners. And he said, if it wasn't for my wife, I would be on the beach. I would be fishing on the back in Greece. I would move back, but it's the woman. It's the woman who's making me continue working.
Yeah.
It was just very funny because in a way it's true. As a guy, you really don't need that much. Most guys would be happy with like a lounge chair, a TV.
That's what I mean.
A joystick so they could play a video game, watch the playoffs.
A beer.
Yeah.
We're good.
But with a wife, you you've got to keep her happy. You have to buy jewelry for special occasions. You need to keep yourself together. But it's interesting. So like, why do women even... I guess it's kind of like a separate question. Like, do you think that with modern technology, and we kind of see this in the secular world where theoretically a woman doesn't even need a man to have a baby anymore. Is the whole marriage thing basically going to be outdated, irrelevant?
I mean, marriage maybe. I have two things to say. So I have two separate points on that. One of the things that I tweet about is that marriage is a traditional institution. If you're not going to abide by its traditional rules, it won't work. To me, it's pretty self-evident.
So now what are traditional rules? Well, rules?
What was that?
Did you say roles or rules?
Both. It's the same thing. Meaning, okay. Yeah, the same thing. Meaning, if you're going to call yourself married, but say that you have something, quote unquote, an open marriage, so then you're not really married. You're not, marriage isn't going to work. Right, because the whole idea of marriage is a traditional idea. It has certain rules. You can't just slap the name marriage on any relationship that you have. Marriage between a man and a man, marriage between a woman and a man, marriage between a man and two or three or four women. Even that has rules. Even though we say that that's mutter, back in the day, that had rules. Marriage between a man and several women wasn't a license for a man to cheat. It was, or just to be intimate with a bunch of ladies. A marriage between a man and several women implied that he was physically and emotionally and spiritually taking care of several families at once, which is why it got prohibited, because nobody could do that. But even that had rules. So everything, marriage has rules. If you're not going to, and I feel like the secular world has completely gone away from, in many cases, has gone away from what those rules are. So women are acting like the man of the household. Men are becoming more feminized and acting like the woman of the household. The idea of man is the traditional role of man as the provider and the head of the household is giving way to, just all different kind of combinations of things. And so if you're not going to play by the rules, then a lot of times those marriages will head towards divorce because that you're breaking the rules of the game. So for people who want to be married and follow the rules, marriage, I believe, will continue for forever. But so, it's really going to be those people who want to play by the rules. The word marriage itself is just a bunch of, marriage itself becomes a thorny, legal, complicated disaster if you don't, if you and your wife aren't kind of like on the same team as to what the actual.
So as a firm man, you're a married man, what are the rules that you need to play by to make your marriage successful?
Okay, well, of course, there's the, you know, there's the, we say in Chassidus, we say there's the pnimius, and then there's the chitzonius, right? So the chitzonius is pretty, we all are aware of that, you know, as from men. Thank God we're at least educated in that. The man is the, you know, is the balabais in some ways, you know, we got to, everybody, we can talk more in detail what that means. And the woman has, the man has his sphere of control. This is a better way of saying it. The man has his sphere of influence and control, and the woman has her sphere of influence and control. And we, those are relatively defined, and we give each other control and submission in those different areas. And then, you know, there's there are other details associated with it. A man has a certain chiyuvim inside the home, right? He is the, you know, he has to dress her and be with her intimately and support her, you know, give her a home. And the woman has her obligations towards her husband and towards the children. And halacha defines a lot of what that is. And if halacha doesn't define it, your local community rav should have a good idea of what those things are.
Right. Nowadays, that's so not necessarily the reality in so many households. The wife could be either even making more, or at least she's making enough that is a substantial part of the income. And as a husband, you might not feel like you're abiding by the traditional role. And I guess it could be that for a lot of men, they don't necessarily feel like they're doing that. And maybe that bleeds into the relationship between them, where he's passive when it comes to, you know, the rent is being paid or the mortgage. And how does it work nowadays?
Yeah. This is a great topic, and it's a confusing one. And I wish I could tell you that I wish I could confidently tell you that I had all the answers. I don't. This is what my original mashpia originally when I became firm was Rav Aaron Cutler, and this is the grandson. He's right now at Lakewood, and I think he's the Menahel Gashmi over there. And he was in such a situation when I originally met him in Eshet Torah, when he was a rabbi there. This is going back 30 plus years, but he explained to me. He said that being the head of the household is not about how much money you make. It's about how much responsibility you take. So if a man is in kolel, for instance, and his wife is working, and he said to me, if I'm in kolel and my wife, Janie, is working, she's not the head of the household. I am, because I'm responsible at the end of the month. I'm responsible that the mortgage and that the finances are paid. I may not do the work, but if for some reason she can't do it, it's on my shoulders. It's not on hers. She doesn't have the responsibility of paying the rent or the mortgage. I do. Now, she can help by going to work, but her and I have decided that for the best interests of our family and the best usage of time and the best spiritual growth of our family, that she should be out doing whatever she was, you know, medical assistant, whatever it was that she was doing at the time, I don't remember, and that I should be learning in kolel, bringing in the ruchnius. But he looked at me and says, make no mistake, I am financially responsible for this household. If my kids need something and we don't have the money for it, it's my job to get it, not hers.
Right. That's very interesting. It's kind of like any leader in any company, they might not do the actual work, but if their top employee goes down, then it falls on that manager to actually get the job done.
Yeah. I mean, have you heard that before?
No, I haven't heard it that way. No.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I thought that was fascinating. You know, I can understand how in practice the lines get seriously blurred. And in today's society, it must be extremely challenging.
Right. You know, right.
Everything I just said to you, first of all, was from a man 30 years ago. Times were different. You know, times were different back then. This man was, you know, obviously a, you know, very holy, you know, person. I don't want to use the word holy person, but a very powerful person that had been raised in a very particular environment. And not all of us have that schus. You know, I can imagine it being very, very easy for if your wife is like a high-powered attorney at a law firm and you're kind of like a mashgiach or something, I could easily see the dynamics flipping around and really creating difficulty in your relationship.
I always wonder how that, like, you know, I wasn't married to that kind of role, but when I see somebody, a woman in that kind of role where they're constantly out there, they're aggressive, you know, every day they're out in the workforce as an attorney, that's a good example. It just seems like it would be difficult to have a traditional relationship. I just kind of wonder how that works. But yeah, one of the things I see out there is like a lot of women in general complain that the responsibilities of women have increased over the years, and men are still going out and working, but that's it. They still just do that. And the woman still has all of her traditional roles, and now she also has to work. And that seems to be like a big point of frustration in the relationship. And I don't know if it's sort of what goes into what you're saying before, that you find that they complain about, you know, maybe they want the husband to pick up some of the more traditional woman roles at the same time. It seems like there's a lot of
discontent.
Yeah, discontent, also like imbalance in the whole structure, like the whole system. The system is imbalanced. It's not.
Yeah. It's tough nowadays, you know, with, listen, let me just say something. This is, it's not just a firm thing. I mean, everybody's struggling with this. Everybody is not just the firm yin.
Right.
It's maybe a little bit exasperated in our community because obviously it costs more to be firm. I mean, that's basics.
Right.
You know, a lot more. So yeah. What we spend a year in tuition is what many people spend over the course of their life investing in their retirement. Funds at 25, 26, 27, 28 years old.
Right.
And then they eventually become millionaires when they're done. We blew that opportunity after, you know, by the time we have our third kid in Haider, you know, our investment for most of us, our ability to invest in our future is down the drain.
So. A lot of us haven't even started a career at that point. We're still thinking about what we want to be when we grow up.
So we're in a different, you know, we live in the same earth, but we live a completely different life. But even for the secular in Goyim, you know, non-Jewish people, you know, this whole rigmarole and this mismatching of, and that's why I said to you before, you know, marriage has certain rules, you know, and if you don't follow those rules, you're going to be hitting a brick wall in terms of, and something I mentioned before. So there's the chitzonius of this kind of these different rules and the roles. And we're very blessed as Frumian to at least have an idea of what those things are, right? And when I speak to non-Jews, they literally have there's very little understanding of what's basic, you know, male-female dynamics. But at least the Torah teaches us something like that. But then there's the whole panemius side too. Right. So the whole panemius side is how to connect with your wife. You know, and you know, we have, of course, letters from the Ramban, and we have the Rambam that teaches us, and we have lots of different sources that help us, as well as Mashpim and hopefully Dugma Chaya from your home. But the pleasant way that you speak to your wife, the role, you know, the mechubed way that you conduct yourself within the home. And it sounds like very prust, but I mean, even simple things that are closing the bathroom door, I mean, just basic kind of things that wouldn't even is like an issue, or not walking around the house in a pair of underwear and without it, with, you know, it's just little things that we do that are so obvious to us. We wouldn't even think twice about such things, but you know, these are basics, you know, but there's the payments, the ways that we speak to our wives and the way we talk to our wives and the respect that we give each other, and not, heaven forbid, never, heaven forbid, using swear words inside the home and any of that kind of stuff. That, you know, these are some of the more foundational ideas, simple ideas, but, you know, even is learning how to listen, learning how to be a good communicator, learning how to, you know, setting a good role model inside the home, going to minyan, you know, at least once a day, if you can get that in there, you know, just to show your dedication to Hashem, you know, these are all things that need to be improved upon as well.
Right. I think it's interesting. Like, even in the secular world, back in the olden days, you wouldn't swear in front of a woman. Hey, knock it off. There's a woman here. Hey, get out of here. What are you doing?
You're right.
That's not even a principle.
Now the women are swearing.
Right, exactly. I think there was one other thing I wanted to ask. So do you think that with no-fault divorce, do you think that basically it's possible to have a marriage if at any time any party can leave? Do you think it's a good thing that if someone doesn't want to be in a marriage, they should just be allowed to leave? Or do you think that it diminishes the whole marriage? And, you know, in the, it's kind of bleeding into the firm world where there are just lots of divorces that are discontent divorces as opposed to abuse divorces or, you know, alcoholism or something like that.
Right. No, good question. So this is something that I don't, maybe you would know more than me, but halakhically, I have an opinion about this. And that is as such that it's not the legality that is the open gate to divorce. It is the cultural, it's the abandonment of marriage that's the problem. So for instance, let's take a look at it in the firm world. Right. So in the firm world, I'm not sure, maybe you would know better than me, but I believe the halacha is for both parties that they can just request a divorce. But what happens, I don't think there's any halachic barriers you have to cross to want a divorce.
Well, you could ask for it, but either party can refuse.
Right. But technically, if the woman pushes hard enough, she can get one. And if the man pushes hard enough, he can get one. I mean, the refusal is not really, there's no such thing as refusing a divorce. I mean, if a woman wants a divorce, she just pushes through Beis Din and eventually they'll ask for a get.
No, I would know. Halachically, she would have to give the Beis Din a reason. And if she just says, I like the neighbor better, the Beis Din is not going to get involved.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. But if she says things like, I feel emotionally unsafe, or I feel extremely disconnected from him, or I feel like he's doesn't love me, or I don't love him. My point being as follows, that yes, it's true. If she comes up with some cockamamie crazy thing, like, you know, like, I just feel like traveling to Tibet right now, you know, the Beis Din is not going to get involved. But similar to secular court, the threshold is pretty low. I don't have to show that the husband hit her or anything like that to get a divorce. It could just be an emotional disconnection dressed up in some sort of fancy term. And at some point, the Beis Din, my understanding is at some point, the Beis Din would acquiesce. But let me just finish my point. The point I'm trying to say here, though, is that there's, just like you said, there's not a cultural abandonment of marriage. So the Beis Din is going to do their best, as well as the community, as well as, you know, our firm world and our family, to keep us together. So even though the door legally may be somewhat open, even in the firm world, culturally, there used to be a tremendous pressure to keep us together. In the secular world, they don't have that. So they're actually the opposite. When a woman says she wants a divorce, if she goes online and she shares the difficulties that she's having with her husband, 80% of the comments, 90% of the comments would be like, you go, girl, and, you know, get that paper and take him for all he's worth and all that stuff. There's no cultural framework anymore of keeping people together. And right, I would say that the firm community, there still is. Now, it's not great, but I don't think that the no-fault divorce aspect is the reason. I don't think it's because a woman can't figure out how to say it to Beis Din to get the divorce. I think it's because Beis Din and the Jewish community is going to do a lot, or they used to do a lot to keep us together. What's your experience been?
Well, my experience, my cases I know about is, and the Bate Dinim that I've dealt with, they basically will pay lip service to the idea that the couple should try to stay together. It doesn't really go, they'll ask a question, and if one side says that they're not interested, then, you know, there's nothing really further to do. The Beis Din will proceed with, you know, the arrangements for a get. Sometimes some Bate Dinim, I mean, we're talking about Orthodox, modern Orthodox, in the Hasidish world, it's a little bit different. They do push much, much more, unless one side kind of left the religion or left the fold. But for the most part, it's sort of not really seen as acceptable. And it's sort of, I agree. I don't think that someone should be forced or pressured to stay in a marriage if they're not happy. But I do think that there are problems that come out when one party wants to leave and kind of, you know, dictate the terms and take everything with them.
Oh yeah, terrible.
And really destroy the other party. It's one thing to leave and say, I'm not happy, I'd like to leave this marriage. And that, I think it's sad and, you know, immature, maybe short-sighted, but there's nothing really to do beyond that. But part of why it's really Bezdin should do everything they can and put resources into keeping the couple together is because, you know, if there's kids involved, like, they really might have second thoughts and they might be going down a path that is damaging. And I'm wondering if you could actually put any perspective on that. Do you know any couples that stay together even though they were convinced that they shouldn't, and then were happy that they stayed together? Does that, like, what's the ratio there? Does that happen more or less?
I'll answer that question in a second. I just want to completely concur with what you just said before. I mean, it's a very important point. And I'm sure that there's many men who are listening to this, and maybe some women, that have been devastated by divorce, for sure. You know, and that's really sad. And I agree with you 100%. Choosing to leave your partner is not a license to destroy your partner. And unfortunately, really unfortunately, because of a whole bunch of things, but one of the ways, you know, and I talk about this with some of my clients, is like, you know, I had this one woman who wanted to divorce her husband, and she's like, well, I'm going to be kind in the divorce. So I said to her, I said, listen, the second you hire a lawyer, it's out of your hands. Okay, their job is to destroy the other party, and they will do everything that they know how to do. Since they've been practicing law, all the tips and tricks, all the things that have been done on their clients that they only figured out after, now they're going to turn around and use every machine gun at their disposal to destroy your partner. There's no being nice in divorce, because it's out of your hands.
Right. It's basically the rules for them. I mean, that's part of their rules of ethics, is that they have to do everything that they can.
Yeah. And this is how they get more clients, meaning...
Right.
After they've completely destroyed the husband in this situation, they got 90% of the assets, and he's living in a van down by the river, as Chris Farley is yeah. Okay. Then they can go ahead. They'll take pictures. They'll send a private eye to take pictures of the guy, you know, up down by the river. And they'll use this, and they'll show other people that come into their office, and they'll say, look, this is what I'm capable of doing to your partner. And now you got to pay huge sums of money to...
Do lawyers have binders with pictures of their victims?
That I don't know, but I was involved in a divorce here, like on a legal level, for a family that I was friends with. And the lawyer was very frank. And he actually didn't even want to take the case. He didn't want to continue working on it, because he's just like, you know, this is... he was very honest. He's like, if I go after this, he's working for the husband in this case. But he said, if I go after this, your wife, you're going to regret it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because this is the mother of your children. So
wow.
Are you sure you want me to represent you? You know, and the guy was like, well, can't you, you know, he's like, no, I have to go for the worst. I have to go for the most to make sure that I get you at least what you're asking for. But in the process, you can destroy somebody. So it's a very ugly situation. It's a very sad situation. And I do have tremendous rachmanis on anybody who's going through that or has been through that. And there are people who have survived that and come out of that and rebuild their lives are mamish heroes, I have to say.
Right. I want to just end off with a couple of questions about your Twitter feed.
Okay.
So you have a Twitter account, and people should follow you. It's at David Feldman, DOVIDFELDMAN. And it's a really, really, you put really great material out there. And you also sometimes, when you have a really popular tweet, I see that you add a link to your book. Some of your tweets have like tens of thousands of views and you know, hundreds of likes and shares. When did you start getting into Twitter? And what got you into it?
Sure, for sure. That's a great question. So, you know, after I finished, I told you in the beginning of this podcast, when I finished school, you know, I went to school, and it wasn't a religious school, it was a secular school. And I was kind of thinking that I would, you know, open up my practice for more than just the West Rogers Park, Chicago community. As it turns out, I literally have no clients from this area at all. And I didn't know really where to begin. And I started going online and looking up men's issues and things like that. And before you knew it, I was, if you're familiar with like the Manosphere online and like the red pill content and all that stuff, which is kind of more right-wing kind of stuff, because they were like the only really community that was talking about men's issues. So I kind of fell in with that crowd. And then after a short amount of time, realized that it was a little bit too radical right wing for me. A Frum guy does not belong as being one of the leaders of that community, or, you know, a strong voice in that community. And
just to push back on that, isn't it, don't they overlap significantly in terms of the man being the leader in the relationship and all that kind of stuff?
Yes, for sure. There's a lot of good stuff in there. I'm not trying to discredit the entire community. It's just that as a marriage therapist who's pro relationships, especially a marriage, like I said to you before, which is, you know, runs by certain basically traditional rules, it doesn't really, I mean, most people in the red pill / MGTOW / manosphere communities are not into marriage. They're more into just relationships. They're very protective of men's rights, which is, you know, again, it's a little backlash as per what's going on today. So I'm not against them or anything like that, but it wasn't a fit for me. I mean, it's hard to be a marriage therapist when you're out there talking to people who are openly saying that marriage is just a trap that you should never get into. You know what I mean? So it's
right,
like,
right.
So I kind of moved away from that, and I just decided to do my own thing. And I decided that instead of focusing on what these people were saying, I'm going to bring Torah values to Twitter. And every day, I don't know if you're familiar, you know, I'm Lubavitch, so we have something called the Hayom Yom, which is the Rebbe's, our Rebbe, the Lubavitch Rebbe's recitation of aphorisms from the previous Rebbe. And it's in a book, and we have one for every day of the year. And every morning I wake up in the morning and I read it, and then I convert it into something relationship centric. So I always have a tweet every morning, good morning, God, good morning, world. And then I take that day's Hayom Yom and I tweet it out in some sort of permutation as it's based on relationships. And the rest of my feed the whole day has to do with, you know, our Jewish way of seeing men and women. And it's dressed up in such a way that you wouldn't necessarily know, but it touches people's hearts. You know, it touched my heart, and that's why it's, you know, touching other people's hearts. And right. Yes, some of my stuff gets pretty viral, some of it.
Yeah. I mean, which tweets do you think get the most attention?
Well, obviously, if I use the three-letter word called sex, you know, those, for whatever reason, seem to always, you know, everybody's interested in sex, basically. So I always feel it's a little bit of a cheap shot. You know, if things are slow that day, put something out there.
I was gonna say, I think Twitter promotes those tweets, because when I look at like your top tweets, they all have the word sex, and it's not really clear. I mean, there's good content, but it's not necessarily clear. Like, they don't have the most shares necessarily or anything, but they have the most views.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting.
So I think Twitter just automatically bumps it up. I wonder if you just made a tweet, sex, 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 sex.
Yeah. But, you know, people, you'd be amazed that, you know, as the famous saying goes, words from the heart enter the heart, you know? And so when I speak from a combination of experience, wisdom, and humility, it touches people, you know? So my most famous tweet has to do with the difference between commitment and love. And that's the one that is pinned on my profile. And I talk about how commitment is the backbone of your relationship, and how love comes and goes. It waxes and wanes like the moon, but commitment's like the sun, and it's always there for us. And it gives us the ability to live and be in relationship another day. And that's just an example of truisms that we believe is from yin to the best of our ability. I totally understand. I mean, when people ask me about divorce, I say, you know, I work with a lot of Christians that don't believe in divorce. And I like to say, well, actually, Jews invented divorce. I mean, we're the ones that came up with the idea of a get. You know, we invented modern day divorce as our invention. It used to be, I explained to people, divorce used to be in the olden days. If a husband didn't like a wife, he opened up the front door, took all of her belongings and threw out in the streets, and then kicked her out. Well, that was divorce. Right. You know, we invented the concept.
Now it's the opposite.
So although we don't, as a people, we don't advocate divorce, you know, it is part of life, but
it has to be an option for sure. It has to be, you know, it has to be in the back somewhere as this could happen, or this is an option if things are really bad.
Exactly. And so, you know, my tweets speak to people, and we talk about, I talk about everything. I talk about, you know, some of my tweets have to do with father-son relationships. Some of my tweets have to do, most of my tweets have to do with how to treat each other respectfully and scenarios that we get. Some of the tweets are like little dialogues that I have in client sessions that just, when people hear them, it's kind of like, oh, I had that same conversation. Always up. Right. I try to be uplifting, inspiring. I try to give people confidence in their ability to be in relationships and to have a great marriage, because I believe that every person can have a great marriage. And some of us have to learn. I learn lessons the hard way. And I'm very thankful that my wife didn't open the door and kick me out. It happened to me. I'm no better than anybody else, you know? And so, but eventually we all get better at it.
Right. So final question. You really think all marriages can thrive?
I do. I know it's a bold statement. I know I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad or anything like that. Again, I've gone through plenty of pain myself, and I deal with people in pain every day. So I do believe that I believe that any man can love any woman and vice versa. And I like to give the example. Do you mind if I give a little example of this?
Sure. Quick example, because we're short on time.
Yes. Quick example. Examples as follows. So imagine if a person, if you're on a cruise ship with 1,000 people, and the cruise ship, heaven forbid, sinks, or for whatever reason, you and another passenger get bumped overboard, and you find yourself on a desert island with a woman who you're not very attracted to, culturally is completely different than you, and doesn't even speak the same language as you. And you're going to be stuck on that island for the next 30 years. Do you think that you're going to end up on different sides of the island? Do you think that you're going to draw a line in the sand and say, no, you're probably 99.9% are going to grow to love this person, take care of her, treat her well, make love with her, have children with her, provide for her, and learn to care for her in spite of all your
efforts. To be fair, the man would fall in love with a football as well.
True.
Or a volleyball or whatever it was. But no, I totally get your point.
Yeah, we are built, Hashem created us to love each other. And, you know, I'm not blaming anybody if it doesn't work out. Heaven forbid, I would never do that. But what I am trying to do is inspire people to let them know that no matter where they're at right now in their life and their relationship, you know, it can improve. It may not improve to be a great relationship where you continue to be married or something like that, but you can definitely learn how to have a better relationship than you're having now.
All right. Well, with that, David, thank you so much for talking to me and for the really uplifting episode. Really, really good, positive messages there. And I think people are really going to enjoy this episode.
Awesome. Well, listen, and I really appreciate the work that you're doing, because as you mentioned, the need for a male space, for positive male messages, for support for men is unbelievable. And I really applaud the effort that you're making and the bravery that it takes, and just from things you shared with me about, you know, your experience and stuff. You know, God bless you and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Let's Get Serious podcast. Please like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends and family. Help us reach more men in our community and help them navigate their relationships and build the best lives for themselves and their loved ones.